Hayden's doing a great job filling in for Tommy this morning. He allowed about, believe about the perfect song to go with the lesson this morning. So really appreciate his talents and willingness to serve. It has been quite a week for many of you all. I know many schools have been out, and teachers and students alike, I'm sure, are thankful for that. We've got a little bit of snow this week. That was great. Today, I think it's gonna get up in the 90s. I don't know. It's a really, really wild. I saw someone say, you can drive around with a snow sled and a barbecue and just stop where you want. Get the weather that you're looking for today. So it has been a kind of a hectic or crazy week for many of you, and we are thankful for this time we have together to come together and study God's Word. I appreciated so much Barry's lesson to go with the Lord's Supper, a great scripture reading, and appreciated his festiveness with his heart tie. I noticed that, Barry. That was great, although you did worry me when you got up and you talked about the foolishness of our preaching, and then I saw you look at me a little bit, and I try. That's all I can say is I try my best, but that was really, really a powerful message to go with our Lord's Supper this morning. We are really blessed to have some great families here at Forest Mill. Amen? It really is. We have some great parents, some great kids, some great grandparents. We have some great families who are a part of Forest Mill, and these families come in all different shapes and sizes. There are families full of girls, families full of boys. We have some that have younger kids, some that have older kids. We have athletic families, artistic families, public school kids, private school kids, homeschooled kids. Some families are first generation Christians. Others are blessed with a rich heritage of faith going back generations in their family. But regardless of how big or how small your family may be, every family has to work. Every family has to work. Healthy, loving families do not come easily to anyone. They do not come automatically to anyone. Every family, no matter how picture perfect they may be up on the screen, every family comes with their own sets of struggles, right? So if we are going to build healthy families, and that's certainly one of our goals here at Forest Mill, it has to be done intentionally. If we're going to have healthy families, it has to be something that we do on purpose. And one of our goals here at Forest Mill is to love and support your family. We want to be a resource and a support for parents and grandparents and kids as they are building faith in their families. That is our goal, is to love and support you through that. And so this morning we're going to talk about that. And you may be thinking, but I don't have kids, or at least I don't have young kids anymore, or maybe you're still single. I don't want you to think that this lesson is not for you too, because this lesson actually is for you too, because we need, and I stress need, godly adults to take an interest in and support our kids. In fact, I would argue, and I'm going to argue, that your involvement, whether you have kids or not, your involvement in the lives of other kids is vital. It's necessary. It has to be there. So last week we talked about race and faith. You may have been here for that. We talked about that. I still have some bookmarks up here. I hope that you're getting a chance to watch that MLK 50 series. Really powerful teaching on the relationship between our faith and the struggle that many have gone through in our society. So we talked about that. And one of the ideas that associated with it was called the myth of time. And that myth, you may recall, it's the mistaken belief that all discrimination and prejudice and bigotry and inequality, that all of that will just work itself out over time. And we talked about that was not true, that time does not automatically, magically work things out like that. This week we're going to deal with a different myth. This is a myth that's associated with families, and you've probably thought about it, even if you haven't named it, but we're going to call it the myth of genetics. The myth of genetics goes something like this. It supposes that faith is kind of like height and hair color, that it just gets passed along genetically. Now, it sounds silly when you say it out loud, and to be fair, I don't know anyone who actually says it out loud. But the truth is that we often treat it that way. We may believe that because our parents or our grandparents were devoted, godly people, that somehow that godliness gets credited to us, that it gets passed along or passed down, that because our mom or our dad or our grandmother or grandfather, that because they were godly, somehow we get credit for that. Conversely, as parents, we might be tempted to believe that somehow our kids, or for grandparents, our grandkids, will somehow inherit our faith. And it should be noted, especially for those of you who have young kids still at home, that when kids are younger, this kind of works. At least on a limited basis, you can kind of get your kids to believe what you believe in that limited sort of way. But the thing is, all these kids, no matter how cute and cuddly and small they may be today, they grow up. You know, they're going to grow up one day. And they're going to have a faith of their own, because they're going to outgrow that simpler version of Christianity. They're going to outgrow the kids' stories and the pat answers. And they're going to need something more substantial if they're going to build their own faith. And when that day comes, it's not going to matter one whit how much I believe or how much you believe. If they do not see the evidence that Christ is alive and making a difference in our lives, they will abandon Christianity as surely as they abandon the stories of storks and babies. That will be tossed out the window as nothing more than a childhood myth, because it isn't real. They don't see evidence of it being real. It's not real in their life, and it must not be real in your life, and it can't be real in anybody else's life, and people are just deluding themselves into feeling good, right? In their minds, Christianity will be marginalized to be little more than a childhood fairy tale. And this is, by the way, this is not me being alarmist. This is not me trying to blow things out of proportion. But this is a very serious situation. In fact, we see this situation unfolding, a story of this, in Scripture. It's a generational story. You may remember how God led the children out of Egyptian captivity, the children of Israel out of Egyptian captivity. Remember, they were slaves in Egypt. God heard their cries, their pleas, their desperation, and so God sends his servant Moses to lead his children out of Egypt. He leads them out of Egypt and into the wilderness. You remember that story? This is yes, right? And while they're traveling in the wilderness, God comes to them at Mount Sinai, and Moses goes up on the mountain, and God delivers to him the covenant and the Ten Commandments. Remember the story of the Ten Commandments? Yeah? And then God tells them how he expects them to act as his people. Right, I'm going to be in covenant with you, and this is what I'm going to do. Here's what I expect you to do. We're going to be in a relationship, and this is the expected parts of that relationship. So after God gives these commandments, this is what he says. In the Deuteronomy version of this, chapter 6, What we read is this. God says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength." Sound familiar to anyone? Right? Jesus quotes this later in the New Testament. Really powerful words. "These commandments that I give you today are to be on your hearts." That's what God was after all along. Not just that people do the stuff, but that they believe it and that they love it and that it's important to who they are. It's a part of their identity. And so continuing on, he says, "Impress them on your children." Talk about them when you sit at home, when you walk along the road, when when you lie down and when you rise up. In order, what God is saying here is that in order for your kids or grandkids or the kids who are in your life to get and understand the importance of what I'm telling you, you are going to have to be involved in the process. You are going to have to be the ones to impress on your children the value of this. Unless your children see and understand the importance of following God to you, they're not going to get it from words on a paper. Unless they see it as real in your life, they will not get it from this alone. Now that's powerful. But that's what God is saying. Is that they need to see that this is real. And you are a part of showing them how this is real. You are the medium by which your kids will learn about God. You, a child of God, made in God's image, are a better teacher to them than the book. It has to be there. Now, this was a principle that God was laying out for the children of Israel as they're beginning this wilderness journey, right? They're traveling the wilderness, and as you may recall, due to a lack of faith, they spent some time in the wilderness, like 40 years wandering around in the desert. And so it was all those years later, 40 some odd years later, that they were finally able to cross over into the promised land, that they were finally able to cross over the River Jordan into the promised land. And it was now Joshua who's leading. Remember, Moses passes away. He doesn't get to go into the promised land. So now Joshua's leading the people instead of Moses. But when they get to the River Jordan, there's a problem. The river was not just a babbling creek. It was like Duck River at flood stage, right, this week? Maybe even a little bigger than that. It was raging to the point that the people couldn't cross over. So they finally come to the promised land. They've made it all the way up here, and now we can't get inside because we cannot cross this enormous raging river. But true to his promises, God leads them across the Jordan River just like he led them across the Red Sea. He creates a dry path for them through the middle. God stops up the Jordan River, stops it from flowing so that they can walk across on dry land, which is just amazing. I mean, can you imagine what that experience must have been like? Here you are, you come up to a raging river, and it stops up, it dries up so that you can all walk across on dry land. That would be a powerful story. It'd be a story that sticks with you. You've probably got stories that stick with you. Maybe it's a story about how you survived a car wreck. Maybe it's a story about that one time someone in your life was really sick and God healed them. Just something amazing, right? Something you give all God all the credit for. And to be there at the Jordan River when God does this, this would be a huge experience. So some of you can relate to maybe the children of Israel because God has provided for you in amazing ways. You have experienced God's blessing in powerful ways. It is a life, a part of your life that is written into your DNA now. So now the Israelites, they experience this provision by God. They get across to the other side and God says, I want you to remember this. So I want you to get one person from each tribe, one man from each tribe, go out and get a rock. So they got 12 guys now, right? They go out and they get big rocks. And they go back, and he says, I want you to stack these rocks on top of each other. 12 big rocks stacked up. This would be like if you were walking through the desert, and you see this, and you're like, this is not on accident, right? 12 rocks do not accidentally stack themselves on top of each other. Somebody has built this on purpose. So when you see this, this is what he tells them to do. He said to the Israelites, in the future, when your descendants ask their parents, what do these stones mean? Tell them, Israel crossed the Jordan on dry land. For the Lord your God dried up the Jordan before you until you had crossed over. The Lord your God did to the Jordan what he had done to the Red Sea when he dried it up before us until we had crossed over. He did this so that all people of the earth might know that the hand of the Lord is powerful, so that you might always fear the Lord your God. In other words, I want you to build this memorial, to build this monument, and point your kids to it and tell them, this is how we got here. This is how your family, your people got here. I want you to bring them down here and show them this big pile of rocks and tell them the story of God, who God is and what God has done. Not just about my God, not just about the God even, but your God. Notice this, the parents saying to the kids, the Lord your God. This is who your God is. Your God is strong. Your God is mighty. Your God has saved and protected and provided for us. That's who your God is. That's the power of a memorial, or at least that's what it's supposed to be. We partake in a living memorial every week. We gather around this table and we share this bread and we share this cup, this memorial. And when our kids say, what's the grape juice for? What's the little tiny Chiclet crackers for? And we try to explain to them, This is because Jesus Christ was raised from the dead, like Barry talked about this morning. That he's not just raised from the dead in the past, but that he's now living in us. When we take his body, we take his blood, we become a little more Jesus each week. It's not just a reminder of what God has done, but it's a call to what God is doing in the present. That's what a memorial is meant to be. That's what it's supposed to be. But eventually, Joshua dies. Just like Moses, Joshua dies. And the fact that whole Jordan crossing generation, they all pass away. And this is what happens when they pass away. After that whole generation had been gathered to their ancestors, that's another way of saying they died, right? Another generation grew up, who neither knew the Lord nor what he had done for Israel. Then the Israelites did what was evil in the eyes of the Lord. It's a pretty sad legacy. That's a pretty sad testimony to an entire generation. I mean, these are people who knew so much. They had experienced so much. By all accounts, they loved the Lord. But in the generations that followed, all of that knowledge, all of that experience, all of that passion was lost. Everything was lost. Here were this next generation. They were living in the land God had provided. They were experiencing the blessing that God had promised to their ancestors, right? They were reaping the harvest of the faith of their fathers. But they did not have a faith of their own. What a sad and terrible testimony. That their ancestors had succeeded in so many ways, but they had failed in one of their primary responsibilities, to pass along their faith. And so for those of us who are here this morning who have kids, This ought to be the fate that we want to avoid more than anything else. My kids probably will not love football the way that I do. I'm just going to tell you that right now. They'll both watch it, and God bless them for doing it. But they will probably not love football the way that I do. My kids will probably not love reading the same books that I love reading. They will probably not have as great an appreciation for the great state of Texas, which is, of course, the best of all states. And that's going to be a little sad for me that they don't love Texas the way that I do. But if my kids don't know how much I love them and how much I love the Lord, it's not just a little sad. It means that I have failed them as a father, that I have failed them as a parent. That's what failing as a parent looks like. So parents, here you go. Let's get practical here really, really quick at the end. How do we pass our faith along? And for those of you who don't have kids, or kids are all grown, or single, this is still for you. I want you to still stay plugged in, because your part is really important in this. But how do we build the future? How do we go about future building? Number one, this is maybe three easy things. You can write them down. You can take a picture with your phone when I get it all up. Number one, you got to talk about it. You just have to. That's what Deuteronomy says. You've got to talk about it. Not in an awkward, uncomfortable way, though I'll tell you, at first it's going to be awkward and uncomfortable. Not just on a Sunday morning, not just in the church building, but you have to talk about your faith. Talk about what the Lord has done for you. Talk about how the God has provided for you, how God has saved you, how God has protected you. Talk about those things. It has to be real. Share what God has means in your life. You have to talk about your faith really straightforwardly. Number two, this is another big one. You have to live out your faith. It cannot be just talk. You have to strive each day to live worthy of the calling to which God has called you, right? And you're going to mess up. This is not an if, but a when you mess up, because you are going to mess up. You have got to, maybe today more than ever, you've got to own that stuff. You've got to be transparent about it. You have to admit your own mistakes and then strive to do better. Admit your shortcomings and try to live better. Your kids need to know, even if they already know, they still need to know on an ongoing basis that your relationship with God is the most important thing in your life. And if it is not the most important thing in your life, by the way, if your relationship with God is frosting on your cake and is not the cake, if your relationship with God is the wallpaper on the house and not the house itself, if your relationship with God is this deep in a this deep world, your kids will see right through that, and they're going to have wallpaper-thin faith themselves. So your kids have to see a real, deep, lasting faith that your relationship with God is the most important thing in your life. You cannot spend all of your time stressing academics or sports or financial success with a sprinkling of God on the side. If you spend all of your time, your family's time and resources and energy on sports, now I'm just going to say this because I'm a sports guy, I grew up in a sports family, my wife grew up in a sports family, my kids have some sports ability. One of my kids has some sports ability. She dances. It counts. No, they're both really gifted. But I will just say I have really seen it from a sports vantage point, because we live in a culture that is like sports crazy. And families spend thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars a year trying to get their kids to be the best sports people they can be, whether it's tennis or football or baseball or hockey or softball or volleyball or whatever sport it is, to the point that a family's spiritual life is sort of neglected. Now, I do not say this to say you can't be a good parent who wants your kids to be involved in sports and be a godly parent, because you absolutely can. But you've got to be really, really intentional about it. And when you travel to go to your games, and there may be some Sundays that you're out of pocket, your kids better know that the most important thing for you on that Sunday is your relationship with God. Sometimes that might mean taking some time out on that Sunday and finding a place to worship or having a family devotional. Sometimes it may mean that a life in a certain sport is just not feasible at this time. But your kids have to know that your relationship with God is the most important thing in your life. And that is not just true for sports. That's just where I have seen it most readily. Your kids will see what you love and what you know, and they will intuitively know what's most important to you. Whatever it is you love, if it's Star Wars, or some of you weirdo Star Trek people, if it is football, if it is academic success, if it is money, whatever it is, if it is what you love most, it doesn't matter how much you talk about God, that's what's going to come through, is what you really love. So you cannot just talk about it, you have to also live it. And finally, this is the last one. This is another big one. You have got to help one another. We have got to help one another. Our kids and our teens, they need godly parents. Absolutely. Not everybody gets that, though. Not everybody gets that. And just as importantly, they need more than just godly parents. They need a godly community. They need men and women that love the Lord and will love and embrace them as well. They need that. Some of you, have been so kind to my kids without just cause. You've gone out of your way to love and support my kids, and I cannot thank you enough for that. Some of you, we have people from churches that we've gone to who are in their 80s who write birthday cards to my kids. And my kids are like, who is this again? Oh, that's Miss So-and-so. She loves you. Right? Because that is important. They want my kids to know how much they're loved. There are moms and dads this morning who are struggling all around you. Some of them don't have godly spouses. Some of them are struggling financially. Some of them are struggling with their marriages. But regardless, everybody's struggling with something. And they need loving, godly people to come alongside them and help them show their kids the power of a life lived in the Lord. So if you don't have kids here this morning, look around and find one, or two, or 20. Find kids that you can love on, parents that you can support, parents that you can mentor, kids that you can be with for their ball games, maybe, or a birthday, or maybe just kids you can give a stick of gum at church. I still remember the 80-year-old lady, Miss Mary, who would give all little kids a stick of gum at church. That's the only reason I sat in worship when I was a little kid, so I could get a stick of gum from Miss Mary at the end. It doesn't have to be big. So here, I want to give you something really practical that you can do this week. And Morris talked about it a little bit earlier. This is the Isaiah 117 house. This is a ministry that's starting up in our community. And this Saturday, they're having a fundraising and information dinner at the Cedar Lane Church of Christ from 6 to 7. Now, Isaiah 117 house, let me just explain briefly what they do and why I think it's important for you and I to get involved. All of the time in our community, in Coffee County, and this is going to serve Coffee County, Grundy Counties, and Franklin County, but all the time, kids' families fall apart and break down to the point that the government has to step in, DCS, right? And so the Department of Children's Services takes in those kids and tries to find placement for them, but there are limited numbers of foster families, and sometimes it takes a long time for a kid to get placed. And so what happens is those kids end up staying up in a DCS office, which, if you have never had the misfortune of being there, is a dismal, dingy place. And they may stay there at the DC office for hours, or they might stay there for days, sleeping on a cot, bathing in a public restroom without a shower, playing with dirty, grungy toys that are piled in the corner until placement can be found. Or if you have the misfortune of being a teen in that circumstance, even if you have done nothing wrong, a teen taken out of a home, a teen who has done nothing wrong, might find themselves in the jail because other housing cannot be found. Until a placement is found, they just live in a jail. So what Isaiah 117 house says, we want every kid who is taken in by DCS to know that they are loved and cared for. So this is going to be a place where they can come. And these kids can come, and if they've got hygiene problems, they can get bathed. If they've got, if they need medication, they can be medicated. If they can get their clothes washed. They can get their school supplies together. And so when a foster family comes along, they don't have to rush into the Walmart parking lot in Murfreesboro at 8 o'clock to find kids who need to be fed, and one of the kids has lice, and now what are we going to do? And be up until 1 a.m. trying to get kids ready for school the next day. And Isaiah 117 house has already bathed and loved and provided for those kids and given them just a place to exist in peace in between. It's a great ministry. Miss Susan Johnson is getting it started in our county. And if you would like to know more about that, I have got some flyers up here. I will tell you that the cost of the dinner is steep. It's free. But the cost of learning the fate of these kids is high indeed. So if you would like to reserve a table, that will cost nothing. If you want to go and eat dinner, that will cost nothing. But I hope you leave there changed and thinking this is one way we can help kids in our community. Your kids may have the blessing of having godly parents. Your kids may have that already, but a lot of kids don't. So let's find ways that we can love kids and show them our faith. And this morning, if you need prayers, if you need encouragement, if you are ready to become a child of God, to put on Jesus Christ, to become a part of a family that loves and cares for you, we want you to know that Forest Mill is here to love and support you. If we can do anything for you now, won't you come as we stand and as we sing?
I come with a humble heart, I come bowing down.